Hello, and welcome back to Dead Shows Resurrected, the podcast where we breathe life into shows long and dead in the grave. My name is Gabby, and I'm here with my co-host,
Lane.
And today we're going to be talking about the season finale of season one of Buffy.
So exciting, we're at the season finale.
Finally!
Feels
like season one was forever.
It kind of did, even though it's the shortest of all the seasons of the show.
It probably didn't help that we did these episodes in, like, 2 months.
Yes.
But a lot of stuff happened where we were living, so.
Yeah.
In case you guys are not aware, in February of 2021, in Texas, where we live, there was a huge winter storm.
Just a little bit of colossal ice nonsense.
The biggest winter storm in 100 years, apparently, in Texas. And a lot of us lost power, lost water. It was a really rough time for, like, an entire week. Even they told us it was only going to be, like, a freeze for a day.
Yeah.
A lot of shit happened, basically. So, yeah. And, of course, life in general.
We're working gals, so yeah. Even though I'm not a gal,
and also
whatever.
Living in a pandemic, you know. Yeah. There's a lot that went on. So, anyway, but we made it. We finally made it.
We made it through season one. We made it through our lives. We made it through 2021, even though it's only March. We don't know when this is going to air, but right now it's March.
Yeah. So, yeah. Episode 12, Prophecy Girl.
Wow. So this was directed and written by the one and only Joss Whedon, which kind of showed. Let's talk about our preconceived notions going into the episode.
Right. Okay. So I vaguely remember Prophecy Girl being pretty good.
Yes.
Especially considering the past few episodes that we watched.
Yeah.
Which, if you want to know our thoughts on it, listen to our previous episodes.
A little strange if you're here and you haven't seen the previous episodes.
Yeah, but to skip ahead. But
no judgment here.
No, it's cool. But yeah, I remember thinking it was pretty good.
Same. I remember having fond thoughts on one particular scene, which I'm sure you also remember, but we'll get to that later.
Yeah.
Let's recap. Who wants to do the recap? Got it.
Okay.
So this is the finale of season one. It brings the Master's story to a close. Basically, finally. no more campy Master.
Aww, sadly. I'm gonna miss him.
Except for in season seven, where he shows up. Yes? No? Yes? No? Does he?
Yes?
Yes?
I think.
Okay. Anyway.
It'll be a surprise.
It'll be a surprise to our memories. But long story short, this episode is about a prophecy. Shocker. There's a prophecy that Buffy will face the Master and she will die. She learns this in the worst way possible. She learns this by overhearing, overhearing Giles and Ms. Callender talk.
Giles and Angel.
Oh, you're right. Okay. My memory is not good today, folks.
Please stop pointing at me like that.
I was jabbing my finger in her direction. Previously in this episode, Xander asks, I completely forgot this again because maybe I'm not going to be doing this recap because I didn't re-record this. But Xander asks Buffy out. She says no. He cries about it. It's stupid. Very unbiased recap here. But anyway, there's a prophecy that Buffy will die when she faces the Master. She's devastated about it, obviously, but after some vampires attacked the school, she realizes she has no choice. And so she has to go and she puts on a prayer dress for prom, and she goes and faces the Master. While he kills her, he drinks some of her blood, and she falls into a pool of water and drowns, seemingly. Angel and Xander are able to save her, and then Buffy kicks some butt, and she saves the day, and everything is okay. Or is it?
Dun, dun, dun!
Dun.
I think in that recap, what you did was skip to the most important part. So really, it was fine. Because, like, the beginning of that episode, we didn't need.
Well, none of the Xander stuff, we really need it.
Yeah. So what Lane neglected to mention is that the episode actually opens on Xander, which is an interesting choice, I think, for a season finale. But yeah, it opens on Xander, and he is at the bronze. Bronze count, one! and he and Willow are at the bronze, and he's practicing his big speech he's going to give to Buffy when he asks her out. And it's really just, it's typical Xander. It's kind of lame.
But he's practicing on Willow, who is in love with him.
Yeah.
And she looks so blissful in this moment where she's pretending that Xander is actually saying this to her. How cruel of Xander to do that. I know he doesn't realize Willow likes him because he's dumber than a sack of bricks. But how mean of him to do that to her, like, in the grand scheme of things.
Yeah. I mean, that's not really his fault. He doesn't know that Willow has a crush on him. But also, I just can't wait for that storyline to be over as well. Oh, gosh. Which is very soon. In season two, I believe it's over, right?
Well, I mean, as far as the end of season two goes, he's still hung up over her, and that's why he...
No. Willow.
Oh, Willow. No, they date in season three.
Ugh, I forgot about that.
Gag, right? Like, mega gag.
Ugh. All right, never mind. But I can't wait for that whole storyline to be over.
The main trio should not be dating any of each other.
Yeah. Anyway, skipping past that, when we finally get to Buffy, it's Buffy out fighting a vampire, like normal.
Mm-hmm.
What I think is so funny is that intersped in this scene is shots of Cordelia in a car making out with her boyfriend at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just so funny because they're in the same area as Buffy fighting the vampire. And so you see Buffy, like, duking it out with this vampire. And then it cuts to Cordelia going, I think there's something out there. Because they hear it vaguely in the background. And it's just, like, it's such an interesting choice of shots that I actually really enjoyed. As it's going back and forth.
I really enjoyed that fight with Buffy because they do a very uncharacteristic kind of slow-mo with Buffy's fighting. And it's not typical of the show at that point or later. But they do a lot of weird choices in this episode that they don't do ever again or before.
Yeah.
But I liked the slow-mo kind of fighting thing. I think it kind of worked. It was a little Zack Snyder-y, but it kind of worked.
Yeah. It was an interesting little fight. Like, it wasn't anything big in the grand scheme of this episode, but mm-hmm. it was a nice little moment. And then after that, it cuts to Giles being at the school researching, as he does.
Mm-hmm.
Which, by the way, I never knew the library had a skylight until that moment.
Did it? I don't remember that.
It literally pans over the skylight looking into Giles researching. It's also where the master falls through.
Oh, that one. Now I know what you're referring to.
Okay.
Yes, we're good. She was looking at me like I was crazy.
It's a big plot point in this episode.
Yes, I remember now.
Not in any other episode, but in this one it is. Anyway, and can I just say how adorable Giles is when he's, like, figuring out a prophecy.
He's so sweet.
And he's, like, researching, and he's like, ah, I found it. And I'm just like, aw, he's so cute.
He's so adorable. Giles' kind of, like, breakdown in this episode is really good and really heartbreaking, I thought.
Yeah, it really is, which we will talk about.
Yeah.
In just a minute. So it's kind of interesting because the beginning of the episode is cutting in between, like, the main people that we've seen so far.
Mm-hmm.
And then it cuts to, after Giles, it cuts to an earthquake happening, and then the master is there.
And he says, glory, glory! It's so funny!
And he's, like, yelling to this guy. And it's just such a fucking drama queen, and I love him so much.
He's the campy gay uncle. I keep saying this.
Yeah, and then he turns to the anointed one and goes, after yelling to this guy, and then he goes, what do you think? 5.6?
It's so funny.
It's just so funny. And then, you know, beginning of the episode. Yay!
There was a long cold open, I thought.
Yeah.
It was really long.
I guess it's kind of like reflecting over the characters that we've seen so far.
Yeah, yeah. It's a little bit of all their personalities, a little bit of all their arcs so far.
Mm-hmm.
Willow's kind of the heartbroken, and Xander is
Xander.
Giles is books guy and all that. But my notes go straight into Giles is kind of, like, keeping the secret from Buffy and trying to, I guess, figure out how to tell her, almost, is the impression I got.
Yeah. I did want to touch real quick before we go into that, because I think that's such a big part of the episode.
Yeah.
So Xander actually does end up asking out Buffy to the prom, or the spring fling, or whatever the mm-hmm. dance is. And I think it was actually such a nice moment for her to be so honest with him.
It was so realistic, I thought.
Yeah, because he says something like, you either feel something or you don't. And she just goes, I don't.
Yeah.
You know? And she's not saying it in a rude way or anything. She's just telling him straight out, which, honestly, as a person, I am so much about honesty in a relationship. Mm-hmm. Like, I crave it. I need it because mm-hmm. I hate games and I hate being toyed with.
Mm-hmm.
So I appreciated so much that she was just straight out, listen, you're my friend, but that's all I feel for you. And Xander is such a little, like, annoying prick about it.
There's a dissent here. because Xander at first is pretty chill and calm when he first asks Buffy out. Mm-hmm. He's very reasonable about it. And he slowly gets worse and worse and worse as she keeps firmly setting her boundaries.
Yeah.
She sets her boundaries and says, no, I'm not into you like that. Sorry, I still want to be friends. But Xander increasingly gets worse, and my sympathy for him goes down. I actually have quite a bit of sympathy for him at first, because I've been in those shoes of, like, confessing to a friend and them saying no.
Well, yeah, I mean, rejection hurts no matter what.
Yeah, but he is really cruel about it. He says some cruel things about it.
Yeah, he really lashes out, and it's, I mean, I understand being upset and, like, lashing out in anger, but it's pointed anger that's just so, like,
He makes marks about Angel, and yeah.
It's really sad in a way that, not sympathy-wise, but just sad and, like, what are you doing?
What are you doing, bro?
Yeah, because one of the things that he says, well, when Buffy says, I don't feel that way about you, I'm sorry, I just don't, and his immediate reaction instead of, okay, is, we'll try.
Yeah.
And it's like, that's not how feelings work, bro.
I mean, I get it's desperation, and I can see him thinking that, but to say it is a whole other ballgame.
Yeah. And then he just, as she continues to say, I'm sorry, I don't think of you that way, we're friends, and I don't want to ruin this friendship, and, you know, she's trying to be as sympathetic as possible to him, because obviously she understands how hard it is to be rejected by anybody.
Yeah.
But he just, as he devolves into this kind of, like, speech that he gives of, like, well, you're just gonna constantly be caught up on Angel and blah, 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 you know, and he just goes on about it.
What does he say? Like, does a guy have to be undead to get with you or something
like that? Something like that, yeah. And it's just, it's so pointed and so purposeful that it's like,
it feels like he was trying to hurt her.
Yes. And I mean, I've been on both sides of rejection before, but it's the anger-filled ones that I think always hurt the worst.
Yes.
Because it's like you try and be nice about rejection, and then they're just mean about it. It's like, I can't help what I feel, you know? Mm-hmm. And I know Xander likes Buffy, and he can't help that either, but if she can be civil towards him while she's rejecting him, he can be civil back.
She was so mature during the scene, and he wasn't. That's the big thing.
Yeah.
And, like, the way this shot and the scene is framed, I think we're supposed to feel all the sympathy with Xander, and I just didn't.
Yeah, because it focuses so much on him in that moment. But, yeah, I didn't either. I really never have.
I can't tell you what filmmaking technique they use here, but there's something about the way that this scene is shot that really just puts all the focus on Xander.
Yeah, it feels very much like a Xander moment and not a Buffy moment.
Yeah.
Which it kind of should have been a Buffy
moment. It should have been a Buffy moment. I mean, like, it's her show, for God's sake.
Yeah. And the fact that, you know, she had just gone through what she had gone through with Angel, and she's still recovering from all of that, is to have this thrown at you kind of out of nowhere.
Yeah.
Is really hard.
Yeah.
But yeah, I really wanted to touch on that because I thought it was a very interesting scene.
I kept skipping past it because, A, my notes skip past it for whatever reason, but also, B, I just hated it so deeply. I just, my brains went right past it.
Yeah, it's a very Joss Whedon scene, I think.
So, we'll go into this when we talk about our whole season thoughts later on, but I will just say one, very briefly, that this whole season felt so focused on Xander in a way that I shouldn't have.
Yes. Yes.
But what's next? What's after this?
Then it goes into back to Giles, and he is calling Angel, which we don't know at first, but he's calling someone on the phone, and then Miss Calendar walks in. Which, hey, Miss Calendar, haven't seen you for four episodes, but there you are.
I forget. I actually really like her character.
I do too. She's very witty and like
she's a cool big sister.
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly. Yeah. And I'm kind of sad that we didn't see more of her in this season.
Yeah, I mean, we get quite a bit of her in season two, but then, you know, she dies.
Yeah.
So.
Anyway. let's see.
I think after that, we go back to Xander.
We go back to Xander, and we actually go back to Willow.
Yes.
We cut to Willow, and Willow is just walking down the hallway, and Cordelia shows up with her then-boyfriend, Kevin.
Yeah, and like,
and they're talking about setting up for the spring formal,
spring formal prom. They say both. It's very confusing.
Whatever dance that they're doing at this time. And Cordelia is really nice to Willow.
Cordelia is so excited to see Willow. Like, genuinely, I think they're doing the character development that started in Out of Sight, Out of Mind. Mm-hmm. And it's really good. I really like it. This is part of, like, when I say I like Cordelia, this is the Cordelia that I like.
Yeah.
The really, like, just fun, kind character.
Cordelia in this episode is actually really good.
She's so good.
I enjoy Cordelia so much in this episode. But, yeah, she and Willow just kind of walk down the hallway, and she is asking Willow to help her with the sound setup for the dance.
And she's a little bitchy, but, like, in a fun, teasing way.
Yeah. It's kind of cute. But then when we cut to Willow seeing Xander in the classroom, mm-hmm. randomly, and he's throwing a ball against the wall after the rejection from Buffy. And so Willow agrees to help Cordelia, and Cordelia walks off, and then Willow goes into the room to talk to Xander.
Mm-hmm.
And he bemoans his rejection and
blah, 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 blah.
Goes on. And then he goes, hey, I know what we'll do. We can go together to Willow. Mm-hmm. And I'm so proud of Willow in this moment.
I'm so proud of her.
Because Willow goes, no. And Xander's like, okay, great. Wait, what? And Willow goes, no. Do you think I want to go to a dance with you when all you can think and be wishing about is that you were to dance with her? Mm-hmm. Talking about Buffy. Mm-hmm. You know, and not in a disparaging way towards Buffy. And like, are you serious right now?
Yeah.
Like, I can't believe you just asked me that.
Yeah, it's season one, episode one, Will would not have done that.
No. And you can kind of see the beginnings of Willow's character arc throughout the later seasons, of how mm-hmm. she becomes more sure of herself and mm-hmm. more confident, and not confrontational, but she is more willing to stand up for herself.
Yes.
And it's just, like, it's such a good moment.
It's her first, like, win, I think.
Yeah. It's her first moment where she really does something for her.
Yes.
And it's so good. Mm-hmm. I am so proud of Willow.
Proud of her. Like,
and then she walks off and leaves Xander to his pain. And actually, this line did kind of get a little chuckle out of me when he goes, fine, I guess I'll just go home, listen to country music. The music of pain.
That was funny.
Yeah, that was pretty funny.
Because it wasn't, like, directed at anyone per se. It was just, like, a little self-deprecating joke.
Yeah. So that did actually get a little laugh. Okay, so then after that, it's...
So after that is the thing that I keep going back to. It's my favorite scene in the episode. It's when they talk about the big prophecy of the episode. That's correct, yeah.
Yeah, well, Buffy has a moment where she is, like, getting ready in the bathroom to go slay for the night, I guess.
She's wearing a steak gown, which is kind of funny.
Yeah, and she goes into the bathroom, and she turns on the tap, and... blood starts coming out. Oh, I should have mentioned earlier in the episode, Miss Callender, when she's talking to Giles, she's talking about how all these weird incidences have been happening around the world.
Like a cat gave birth to a snake or something like that.
And a baby was born with its eyes facing inward.
Which is real creepy. Good job.
Really creepy, yeah. But, like, these weird incidences have been happening around the world. And then Buffy turns on the tap and blood starts flowing out.
Yes.
And it's like, oh shit, something is happening. And that's
shit's gone real.
Yeah, and that's when Buffy goes to Giles.
Yes.
And then we cut to Giles and Angel mm-hmm. in the library talking about the prophecy.
Yes. So in this, they're talking a little bit vaguely at first. And Buffy kind of, like, steps aside over here.
Well, because she's really excited to see Angel all of a sudden. Because she hasn't seen him for, like, five episodes or something. And so she does a little eavesdropping on what they're doing.
Mm-hmm. And, yeah, basically Giles tells Angel, roughly she's skirted prophecies before, she can't skirt this one, the Slayer will face the Master and the Slayer will die. And Buffy loses her shit. Yeah. Completely justifiably.
The laughter that she gives when she hears that.
Oh my, like, god.
Kills me.
It's true. Sarah Michelle Gellar, in this scene, kills it.
Oh my gosh.
She slaughters
so
it.
She's so good.
This is, like, the best acting we've seen of her so far, and she's not shown any really poor acting, but this is the best acting we've seen of her so far.
Yeah. The emotion and just, like, it's that laughter you give when you get bad news and all you can do is help.
Like, crushing news.
Yeah, like, you can't help but laugh because, oh my god, is this actually happening?
The feeling that I got from it was, like, oh, of course. Like, of course this would happen. That's kind of what her laughter invoked in me.
Yeah. It's that laughter that happens that you can't help.
Yeah.
Because there's nothing else to do at that point but laugh. Because yeah. It's like, wow, the world is such a shit show, you know?
Yeah.
Like, confronts, well, not confronts, but she...
lashes out, kind of.
Yeah, lashes out at Giles and Angel, but mostly Giles.
Yes.
Because this is the man that's supposed to be helping her, and now he's telling her that she's gonna die.
Yeah.
Like, it's just, it's crushing, you know?
I'm sure Buffy felt like this was Giles giving up on her.
Yeah. I got that, too, because she says, I get how it goes, you know, once a Slayer dies, a new one is called.
Mm-hmm.
Are you going to train her, too? Yeah. Like, it's just, like, that moment of, like, are you serious right now?
There's a couple of moments in the scene that make me really give the impression that Buffy doesn't know as much as we thought she did.
Mm-hmm.
There's a couple of different moments, also, that make her seem so young.
Yeah.
So young. And the line that stands out to me more than anything else in this entire show is two lines. But the first one is, do you think it'll hurt? And she says it in this little tiny crack of a voice, and it's unbelievably good, and it's so crushing.
Yeah. And then the other line that gets me
mm-hmm.
every time mm-hmm. is, Giles, I'm 16 years old. I don't want to die. Like, she says it in such a meek voice
mm-hmm.
that it crushes you, because it's like, truly, this is a 16-year-old girl.
Mm-hmm.
She has so much life ahead of her and so much responsibility put onto her that, yeah, you wouldn't want to die either at 16.
This scene is such a good juxtaposition, because Buffy is such a bright character, both in intelligence and in like spirit. She is so lively. She is so alive. And to have her face her death for what's probably the first time, it's just completely crushing. And I put in the notes, I don't want to die. I think that the I don't want to die line definitely kind of sums up the entire like high school era of the series.
Yeah.
It's just like the perfect microcosm of Buffy. Like, this scene in general is a perfect microcosm of Buffy. The other one that doesn't quite stand as high, but really I love, she throws like a book at Giles and she yells, mm-hmm. read me the signs, tell me my fortune. Like, it's just brilliant. It's brilliant writing. It's brilliant acting. And it's in, like, kind of shadow the entire time. And, like, I was just crushed watching this. And I've seen this, like, four times.
Yeah. And what I love, too, is that even though Angel is a part of this, he's not really a part of this. Like, he's kind of mm-hmm. there in the background. And he kind of goes towards Buffy like he's going to hug her or, like,
console her,
some form of comfort. And she just straight up goes, don't touch me. Like, mm-hmm. how dare you in this moment?
Because it's very hard to kill him. She says, you'll never die.
Yeah. And it's this cut back and forth between Buffy, who is kind of having this breakdown.
Yeah.
Of like, oh my God, this is actually happening. Yeah. And she says multiple times, well, I have an idea. I quit.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to be the Slayer anymore. I'm fired. You know, just like,
yeah.
No, it's not me. It's not me. It's not me.
Yeah.
And it just cuts back every once in a while to Giles, and you can just see this face of, like, what do I do?
Do they teach this in, like, watcher school? Like, we don't know.
Exactly.
I mean,
like, how do you face your Slayer's death?
And Giles has to know, because later on in the series they establish that Slayers very rarely make it past 18.
Mm-hmm.
And, in fact, they try to kill them once they hit 18. So, Giles came into this job as a child knowing his Slayer would die very young. And I don't think he really reckoned with that properly, because mm-hmm. now clearly he's not handling it well. Yeah. And not that he, like, how do you handle this well? Good God.
Yeah. Well, I think it's, like, one of those things that you learn about, right? Mm-hmm. Like, you learn about death at some point in life, right? Yeah. And it's just, it's a foreign concept to you until someone actually dies. Like, you understand the concept, you go, okay, at some point we all die.
But it seems so foreign and far away.
Right,
and
but then someone close to you dies, or you know someone who dies.
Your grandma, or whatever.
Yeah, and then it becomes real. Yeah. It's like that moment where, like, this actually happens. And mm-hmm. I think that's kind of the moment that happens for him, because he's come to care for Buffy, he knows Buffy. Like, before she was just the Slayer, right? Yeah. He had no face. He had no concept of who she was as a person. And you can kind of see that in the first couple episodes where, like, he doesn't really understand her.
Yeah.
He doesn't really get it. She's just the Slayer to him. Mm-hmm. But as the season goes on, you can see that he kind of comes to care for her and that they become closer.
Mm-hmm.
They have their little quips back and forth and their mm-hmm. little fights. And this moment is, like, actually soul-crushing for him because mm-hmm. he's about to lose his Slayer. Like, what do you do?
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing to do.
And I think especially also, I think Giles is also reaching, like, the end. Because what do Watchers do after their Slayer passes?
I don't know.
That's never established. They probably go back to England or whatever, and they hang out in their big castle. I think they have a big castle. I think they do. So it's he's not only facing the death of someone very, very dear to him, he's also facing, like, the death of, like, his almost, like, this is not as important, but the death of his role. And that's also something to consider.
Yeah, like his purpose.
Right? His purpose, yeah, for real. But this scene is so good, and I think that later on in the episode, it kind of ruins it in a certain way. I'll get more on that later.
Mm-hmm.
But I think this is the exact kind of gravitas and emotion and writing that I want to see from this kind of scene. I have a question for you.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think this weight and this like attitude about death and about the Slayer role, do you think that's consistently portrayed throughout the series?
No.
Right?
Absolutely not.
No.
Mm-hmm. I don't think it's even consistently portrayed in this episode.
This episode, I will say right here and now, is a tonal mess.
Yes.
Because we have beautifully wrought scenes like this, and then almost immediately after this episode, I don't remember what the scene is after this, but then my note is, Xander's problems compared to Buffy's in this episode are pathetic. Like, I'm sorry, but...
It's actually, what my thoughts were, this episode actually starts out really well.
Yeah.
It has a beautiful beginning where, even though it starts with Xander, but, like, you see both Buffy and Willow facing Xander and soundly rejecting him.
Yeah.
Which is just, like, a beautiful moment.
Wow.
And then you have this scene, this heartbreaking scene between Giles and Buffy, and Angel there, too. And it's just, like, it's this great scene, it's full of so much emotion. And then it cuts to the scene where Buffy is at home, and she is looking through a photograph mm-hmm. of, like, her life.
Mm-hmm.
As she's growing up like a kid.
Mm-hmm.
And then her mom comes into the room, and they actually have a really cute moment where they're talking
mm-hmm.
about Joyce is wondering why she's not going to the dance.
Yeah.
And then she kind of gives like a little background on how she went to a dance by herself.
In college,
and that's how she met Buffy's father, even mm-hmm. though he was there with another girl.
And she's like, that's a story in front of the time.
That's a story you will never hear.
Yeah.
That's what she says.
Okay, yeah.
It's a really cute moment. And honestly, Joyce is such a good mom.
Like, she's so good.
She tries so hard. And Buffy makes this remark of, like, you have your whole life ahead of you, huh? Talking about Joyce in that moment.
Yeah.
And it's so sweet, but it's also heartbreaking.
Mm-hmm.
Because Buffy has just come away from the fact that she's probably going to die tonight.
She's definitely, like, the signs, the fates have told her she's going to die.
Yeah. And then Joyce presents her with a dress mm-hmm. that supposedly Buffy had been eyeing before this for mm-hmm. this dance. And it's actually a really beautiful dress.
I didn't like it, but I don't like dresses, so I'm not an unbiased
person. Well, it's actually a really beautiful dress. My only problem is that it's white.
It looks like a wedding dress.
It looks like a virgin sacrifice, is what it reminded me of.
Okay, that's probably what they're going for.
Yeah, it's this very kind of...
I got it like a First Communion vibes from it, kind of.
Yeah, it's like a... It's not quite an A-line dress, but it's got a very sweetheart necklace. Very sweetheart neckline, mm-hmm. where doesn't show a ton of cleavage, but shows a little bit. You know, mm-hmm. it's very, like, demure. It's got the big spaghetti straps, and it's, like, a white little bodice at the top, and then just mm-hmm. kind of flowing.
There's a cutout in the front.
Yeah, it's, like, overlay over, I'm sure, whatever the bottom of the dress is, and then there's a little bit of a cutout in the front. But it's very demure, very, like, almost nightgownish, but yeah. Dressed up a little bit.
Yeah.
it is kind of very, like, small wedding. But to me, it hit more like virgin sacrifice.
The kind of dress you put on a girl before you throw in a volcano.
Yes, exactly. And I'm pretty sure that's exactly what they were going for.
Yeah, I bet.
Because Buffy tries on the dress, and then she wears that for the rest of the episode.
Like, yeah.
For no reason.
With the leather dress. She gets ready for the dress for the prom really early. Probably, I'm just not realizing, because she realizes she's not going to go. She wanted to try it on, and then she was interrupted.
Right.
And so she just kept it on.
Yeah, so after this scene, Willow and Cordelia are back at the school because they're trying to figure out what happened to Cordelia's boyfriend, because he was supposed to bring, like, the decorations or something for the dance, which I don't know why the students are setting up for a dance, but okay.
Why is the dance the Bronze?
Probably because it's the only place that can hold that many people.
Probably.
But yeah, and they go, and then they find Kevin and the guys he was supposed to bring with him to help set up have all been eaten by vampires. And by that, I mean they have big old bite marks taken out of their necks.
Yeah.
And there's just blood everywhere. There's, like, blood on the TV that is in the room.
The TV's playing, like, a Three Little Pigs cartoon, and there's a really good lingering shot of the TV with the Three Little Pigs with the handprint, the bloody handprint on the TV. It's really good, actually.
It is. And, like, Cordelia's freaking out because her boyfriend is dead there, and you just see Willow, like, ashen face. Like,
she's
never seen this before. This is the actual carnage in front of her.
Yeah.
And then as Buffy's trying on the dress, it cuts to Joyce coming in and telling them, there's something on the TV. It's Willow.
Mm-hmm.
And then the next scene is Buffy heading over to Willow's. And Willow is curled up at the head of her bed. Mm-hmm. Like, she can't handle this. Because honestly, how could you handle four teenage boys that you knew being slaughtered like this in your school?
Yeah.
And I think she actually mentions that, too.
I knew those boys. I'd been in that room.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's this really touching moment between Buffy and Willow,
mm-hmm.
where, like, Buffy is trying to comfort her friend, but how do you comfort someone who has experienced that much death for the first time?
Yeah.
When Buffy is kind of more desensitized to this.
Yeah.
But you can see in Buffy's mind right there, she's like, oh God, I have to do this.
It's very good acting, again, from Sarah Michelle Gellar, as she's, like, making this mental decision as Willow is talking. Like, I don't know what changes in her face or what happens there, but you can just tell.
Yeah.
She's decided.
She's accepted her fate, basically.
Yes.
And, of course, she's in the dress with her leather jacket on. And it's a very introspective moment, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Where Buffy has accepted that she is a Slayer. She has to do this.
Yeah.
To protect Willow and all the people in the town.
Yeah.
So then
In the world,
yeah. So then she goes back to the school where Giles is there, and he's basically preparing for war. Like, he's going to go on Buffy's behalf to kill the Master, even though he clearly knows he's going to die.
Yeah, he's going to be knocked out immediately, which he is later. You're welcome.
Giles knockout count one.
But Miss Callender makes a little comment that is so heartbreaking. She, I think, is, like, looking at a picture of Buffy or talking about Buffy, and then Miss Callender goes, she's so little.
Yeah.
Do you remember that? That was, like, oh my God, she is little. Thank you.
But yeah, so Buffy comes in and she basically goes, you're not going to go after him. I am.
Mm-hmm.
And they have this moment where they're bantering back and forth, basically, of like, no, you're not. I'm going to do this for you because you're right. I shouldn't be such a bookworm. I need to be going out and helping you.
Yeah.
And Buffy is like, no, you're going to die. Yeah. I'm going to go do this. And then she knocks him out. She actually throws a punch and knocks Giles out.
She reaches back and sucker punches him. It's great.
But I think in that moment she knew there was no other way that Giles was not going to go. Mm-hmm. And she wasn't going to let Giles die.
Mm-hmm.
So then Buffy goes off to basically confront the Master.
Mm-hmm.
And we cut back to Giles is awake. Mm-hmm. After being knocked out.
He's got an ice pack on his chin. It's very cute.
Yeah. And Willow and Xander and Miss Callender are all in.
Mm-hmm.
And Xander's going off on a rant of like, I can't believe this. And how could you let her go? And blah, blah. And Giles makes a comment of going, well, if you notice by the purpling on my jaw, I didn't let her do anything.
Yes.
Which Yes, Giles, tell him off.
The way Xander phrases this in the scene is very patronizing, I thought.
Yeah. It is. And he's kind of patronizing this entire episode.
He really, truly is. After that, Xander realizes the only person who would know where Buffy and went is Angel.
The only good thing he's done in this episode.
How did he know where Angel was? Did Buffy tell him? Did Buffy know?
I don't think so.
How did he find him?
I have no clue. The only person I think we've seen go to Angel's place in this entire season, besides Angel, is Darla.
So, like, I don't know how... So, I assume Buffy had never been there, but then... Whatever.
Xander just magically knows where Angel is.
Yeah, it's just strange. And Xander's weirdly racist in here against vampires, and it's just very strange and funny. I mean, like, I get hating vampires, but he's very aggressive about it, and like, puts a cross in Angel's face and stuff. And I get not trusting Angel. That's reasonable, I think, to a certain extent.
Yeah.
But also, Xander's just so aggressive about it, because Angel's a threat.
Yeah, but not a threat in the fact that he's a vampire.
No.
A threat because Buffy holds affections for him.
Which
is just such, like, a toxic masculinity trait.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah.
It's really annoying, actually.
It's so obnoxious, and I wish it was, like, I wish it was, like, Willow instead, or someone else. Like, Willow and Angel would have been a really fun combo.
Yeah.
Like, it just, anyone else, please, God, Giles, I don't know, Calendar, Cordy, I don't care, someone else.
Well, what's so interesting is Giles obviously has Angel's phone number because he calls him in the beginning.
Oh my
Why
God.
Why didn't he just call him?
That would have made so much more sense.
Right?
You're right. Yeah.
Yeah.
What the heck?
I don't know. And this is the part for me where the episode started really to dip.
Yes.
Into questionable territory.
So it said they figure out that the Anointed One's a child, not a big cool vamp like they thought. And so Buffy is like, I'll find him, and then she goes outside and he's just kind of there.
Mm-hmm.
And the Anointed One leads her down into like the sewers, which is super funny. I have a question for you. What is the purpose of the Anointed One in all this? Besides to lead Buffy down to, like, hell?
Nothing. He's just there. He's there as a sounding board for the Master. That's literally all he is. It's so the Master can rant at someone without seeming completely off his rocker.
I guess. I mean, he could have had, like, other lackeys there. I don't know. The Anointed One was supposed to, and I brought this up in an earlier episode, the Anointed One was supposed to be, like, a big deal later, after the Master dies.
Mm-hmm.
But then the kid grew up too fast, and so they had to...
Yeah.
It
feels like they were really trying to make him something.
Yeah.
And he just wasn't.
The kid doesn't have much, like, gravitas, which is no fault of his.
Yeah.
But, like, he doesn't have much, like, presence or anything, because he's a kid.
Yeah.
You know? He's just a kid.
Well, he's not freaking Damien from the Omen.
Yeah.
You know, like, that kid was scary.
He's a very normal-looking kid, like a kid you'd see outside playing. He's just a very aggressively normal kid, and so he's not that scary. Do you want to talk about the fight with the Master?
The quote-unquote fight. So Buffy goes in crossbolt swinging, because she literally just fires off. She banters first, which I love this line that the Master says. Oh, good. The feeble banter portion of the fight. Like,
I think he knows her.
Of course. But then she shoots off a crossbow bolt, and he catches it. He's like, good shot, you know, because it would have hit him if he was anybody else, obviously.
That was a little bit creepy, I thought, when he catches it. He's like, oh, good shot.
Yeah. The Master is really good in this episode. He's really good. But this fight scene is just, it's very poorly shot. It's not great.
I mean, I don't mean to victim blame here, but Buffy doesn't really even put up much of a fight.
She really doesn't. Like, it's a lot of her... She turns around and the Master's gone, and he's doing this weird, like, the creepy thing where the voice is coming from somewhere, but you're not quite sure where.
But she's just sort of, like, weakly stepping around, kind of sort of looking for him. It's just strange.
Yeah. And I don't know if they were trying to make it seem like Buffy had just accepted her fate and she was just going to try her damnedest to defeat the Master,
mm-hmm.
or if they just didn't know what direction they wanted to put this fight in.
Yeah.
But, like, she doesn't really do anything besides firing off that one crossbow bolt and that's really it. She tries and, like, hits the master maybe once.
Yeah.
And then he, like, does this weird hypnotizing thing to her, which has he ever displayed powers like that?
I don't know if he's ever displayed powers like that. I don't know if anyone else does ever again.
Yeah, I'm not really sure. I don't think it was ever clarified exactly what made him so big and bad, besides the fact that he was one of the older vampires.
Yeah, I think I would be fine with him having unique powers by being old, but they don't really establish that very clearly.
Yeah, I wish they had done more with that.
Yeah.
In the earlier episodes.
And maybe a little flashback, like, showing him, like, in 5 BC or something like that.
Yeah. Know? Or even, like, controlling the other vampires beyond just telling them what to do. You know, like, mind controlling them.
Maybe he could only mind control humans.
I don't know. But, like, then bring down a human he's supposedly to feed and, like, mind control them into being more submissive or something. Yeah. I don't know. Like, there's ways to do it, you know? But this kind of comes out of nowhere. And then Buffy very just, like, meekly stands there as he bites her.
Did you get, like, a weird sexual vibe from that? Or is that just me?
No. I think they were trying to make it in the old school kind of Dracula way, where, like, he purposely stands behind her and tilts her head and bites her neck.
That's probably the vibe that I was getting, like, an old school Dracula type deal.
But can I just say, that is the shortest blood drinking ever in this
was he story? Trying to kill her?
I think so. But he literally takes, like, 2 seconds to bite her. And then, I guess, slurp some blood. And then he just lets her go.
My impression was he only wanted a taste of her blood, and that he was just gonna let her, like, bleed out and die. That was my impression.
I mean, I guess maybe, but, like, it was so fast.
It was really brief, and it was like, I don't know what they were going for exactly.
Yeah. Because you don't see any blood. It's not like blood comes gushing out or anything. Not that it actually does that in real life, but, like, I would have liked to see some blood on her shoulder, or even on her dress. Because she's wearing a white dress, people. You should see blood on it. There's no blood on her dress at all.
Or him say, like, I don't even want to kill you, you know?
Yeah. Like something. Like, in the typical campy villain fashion that you should have done.
Yeah.
He literally, like, bites her neck, takes a sip of it, I guess.
I
don't, you don't hear anything. And then just lets her fall. Like, it's a... What?
It's very strange, and Buffy just sort of, like, planks onto the ground.
She planks onto the ground straight into the body of water.
And it was so they could, like, resuscitate her in some sort of natural way, I guess. The episode just really starts to dip more and more and more and more as this goes on.
Yeah.
And
then the master's free from his little prison. So
there's a really funny sound effect when he, like, gets free. It was, like, I don't remember what it was exactly, but it was a very, very funny sound effect.
Yeah, I don't remember. But, and then, of course, Xander and Angel show up, you know, 2 minutes too late. And Xander's being useless as possible. And Angel runs down and, like, can you tell me why he grabs her ankle first?
Did he?
Yeah, did you not see
that? No, I didn't see that.
I replayed it because I wasn't sure, but, like, he runs over to Buffy. And I actually appreciate the fact that he didn't, like, stop and go, Buffy! And then run towards her.
No, he just went for it,
which is much more in character.
Yeah.
And actually something you would probably actually do.
Yeah.
But, yeah, he grabs her ankle, like, he's gonna turn her over by her ankle, but then he drops it and then, like, picks her up.
He checks her pulse
by her neck and her arm, which are both places you should check pulses, truly.
What's that third one, like your thumb or something?
A heartbeat is in the thumb, that's true, but it's like your neck, your wrist, and somewhere else. I'm blanking right now.
I don't know.
Anyway, that's not the point. But then he just goes, she's dead. Like, thank you, Angel. We couldn't tell them that by the fact that she's not breathing.
I hate how this whole scene is comprised in order to let Xander do the mouth-to-mouth on her.
Ugh.
Gag.
Yeah. They make this very interesting choice where Angel can't give her CPR because he doesn't have any breath.
Yes.
Which you've brought up that in later seasons... What did you say?
So Spike smokes a cigarette lighter and, like, visibly breathes in and out. And then I saw on the wiki that vampires can choose to breathe in this universe, which makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
So why didn't he choose to do CPR on the girl he loves?
I don't know. It's a very obvious choice to have Xander do it.
Yeah.
And then Xander obviously gives her CPR, which is some of the worst CPR I've ever seen.
It's
in a TV
so pathetic.
Show.
It's like, I don't know jack all about CPR, but I can tell he was barely doing chest compressions.
Yeah, well, so in chest compressions, right, it's actually, it's hard to get to the heart, obviously, because you have a rib cage, right? So people regularly break rib cage when they're actually giving personal CPR, that purposeful CPR.
Yeah.
Because you're trying to get the heart pumping.
I think Buffy in The Body, the episode where Joyce dies, mm-hmm. she does break Joyce's ribs when she tries to do CPR on her.
Yeah. Well, I think that's more of a show of how strong Buffy is.
Yeah.
But that's actually, that actually happens
you know,
in real life. People break rib cages because they're trying to get to the heart pumping. That's what you're supposed to do. And he's very obviously just like lightly pushing on her chest. And I appreciate the fact that he's not actively kissing her like some media loves to show.
No, he's trying to do legitimate CPR and not make out with her.
Yeah, but
dead
it's
body.
Just it's really bad.
It's bad.
And he tries for like a minute at the most.
And then what's funny is like he stops and then Buffy is just laying there dead for a moment, like a moment, like a long moment. And then she like really like in a strange cut, she like her eyes jump open and she's awake. And it's really
and,
funny.
Yeah, and then she coughs up water.
Yes.
Which if you had truly been, like, given CPR from just drowning, that's the first thing you would have done.
Yes.
Coughed up water.
Yes.
And you would have had to turn over so you don't literally drown yourself again.
Yes.
It's just such an obvious moment of, like, look, Xander is the hero, you know?
Oh, God. It's just so carefully constructed to give Xander a win after. It's like, Xander can't. Get like Xander can't lose, you know. It's like every time he loses, he immediately gets that win.
Yeah,
it's just it's really like unpleasant.
Yeah.
After this is the this they kind of go back to Cordy and there's like they're looking for where the vampires are congregating mm-hmm. and they think it's the Bronze. They all go outside and they start to go to the Bronze and they realize actually it's the library. Because in a weird zombie-like scene, vampires are, like, congregating on the school. Mm-hmm. And it's another, like, weird vampires or zombies thing. They
yeah.
It was very strange. The funniest part of this entire episode is Buffy's power walk as she goes back to the school. They play the theme song of the show, and it's just so tonally crazy.
Dissonant,
and I was looking for that word. It's just, it's really weird.
Yeah, so I actually, when it's done well, I actually love when they play, like, the intro theme or the main theme of a media during a big action scene or, like, a preparing action scene, because I think that's just, like, such a beautiful callback to the beginning.
I think of, like, Guardians of the Galaxy 2.
Yeah, yeah, where they start doing, like,
Through the Max the Chain.
Right, but it's just, like, or, you know, in certain animes where they start playing the theme song over a big action theme, and it's just, like, so powerfully done, because you could tell that they're going to triumph, you know? But in this scene, it's just so weirdly done, because Buffy had just come back from the dead, and she's like, I feel fine. I feel strong, you know?
Yeah.
Let's go get the Master, or whatever. And then she's just, like, power walking kind of slowly towards the school with Angel and Xander behind her.
Mm-hmm.
And they start playing the theme song. And it's like, what?
What?
This is not triumphant. This is not, like, that moment of power.
So I think of almost the best episode of the series, Once More Feeling.
Yeah.
When they have that power walk to go face that demon episode.
Mm-hmm.
And that was really well done because that was really kind of sad.
Yeah.
That scene was kind of sad, even though they're pretty triumphantly singing. In this case, it's just so totally strange because throughout this entire episode, they've done a really consistent vibe of this is tragic, this is sad, what's happening, what's going on sucks.
Yeah.
And now to have it be this weird girl power moment is like, what?
Well, I think that's what they were trying to go for is like, Buffy has accepted her fate. Yes, she died, but now she's come back even better and stronger. But it didn't work. Like, there's too much missing from the rest of the episode to make that moment work.
It's too sudden.
Yeah. It's very just like, bam, she dies. Bam, she's brought back. Bam, she has a triumphant moment. Like, it's too quick. It happens within, I think, 2 minutes. And it's just, it's too much too soon. Can we talk about Cordelia taking the drive-thru?
That was hilarious. That was so funny.
So right before we see Buffy do the power walk, Willow and Miss Callender are going to rush to the Bronze to try and warn them, because I think that's where the vampires are. Then they get confronted by the vampires, and Cordelia drives up and is like, get in!
Yeah.
And then they're like, we have to get to the library. And Cordelia's like, right, the library. And Will's like, which we usually walk to, but Cordelia just doesn't even listen to her, just drives straight through the school to the library. And it's just, it's such a funny moment.
But it's kind of, it kind of works, too, because it's the logical kind of thing to do, because it's safe.
Right, exactly, and it's quicker.
Yeah.
But what I think is so funny is that they cut the music off when Buffy's making her power walk to that moment. And I think it would have been so much better if they just kept the music going on, because that is truly a triumphant moment.
Oh, yeah. So they're all kind of fighting in the library as Buffy goes to confront the master on top of the school. Cordy bites a vampire, which is the funniest thing of this entire season.
Yeah, and she goes, how do you like that?
Yeah, you like it. It's just, it's so funny. Like, Cordy's so good. Miss Callender trying to protect Willow this entire scene is really sweet, too. Like, they barely know each other.
Yeah.
But she's, like, really trying to, oh, actually, she does know her pretty well, because, Willow takes her class.
Oh, yeah, that's right. That's true.
Yeah.
Oh, and it turns out, guess what? The Hellmouth was under the school the entire time.
Who would have thought?
Wow.
So the Hellmouth is, like, a mass of, like, kind of greenery-type tentacles. And the puppetry, I actually thought, and it was really good.
It was, my only question is, what the hell kind of demon is that? Like, it just...
A Mario demon? I don't know.
I guess. I don't know. It's very much, like, an alien plant.
Yeah.
With a bunch of weird vine tentacle things and, like, three heads. I don't know. It was very weird.
It's like, that musical, I can't remember anything that the fuck is on.
Oh, Little Shop of Horrors?
Little Shop of Horrors. Yeah. Kind of, only like in a smaller scale.
Yeah. But no, the practical effects on it, I think, were really good.
It was one of the best practical effects of the entire show.
Yeah.
So far.
And then, so they're trying to survive in the library, and then Buffy is confronting the master. And they're having their little banter again.
The quips.
Yeah. And then my favorite line that she says is, I may be dead, but I'm still pretty. Like, it's stupid, but it's kind of funny.
It was so, I thought it was really dumb. I didn't think it landed well.
It didn't, but I thought it was funny at the time. Just because I was so done with this episode. Yeah. This is really the worst part of the episode, is this moment onwards.
I think the very end of the episode kind of worked, but only because I think we need to consider a couple of things here. Mm-hmm. First of all, I'm pretty sure at this point the creators didn't know they were going to get more episodes of Buffy.
Yeah.
So for the viewers at home at the time in 1990, whatever the fuck, and for the creators, Joss Whedon and co, they thought this was the end of the series, and it kind of works as the end of a series. Like, clearly there's more story to tell, but also it's got a nice little bow on it. But what we know later on in season 2 is that Buffy is really fucked up over this.
Yes.
Like, Buffy is really, truly, like, messed up. But, like, maybe she's half adrenaline at this point. Maybe she's,
kind of in shock.
In shock.
Yeah.
But she's just so quippy and she's so, like, chill with it. The only signal that we get that something has, like, fucked her up over this is that she kind of sadly looks at the master's, skeleton and, then kind of, like, this is a quip and then walks away.
Yeah.
And that's the only indication that we get. And we can cut this later if you want, but I kind of want to briefly talk about, like, a person's actual reaction to almost dying.
Yes, we can get into that. I just wanted to finish up the episode real quick because we're almost done.
Yes.
And then we can kind of talk about our thoughts on it and, like, our thoughts on the series.
Yeah, yeah.
Season overall.
Yeah.
But, like, so basically Buffy... The master tries to mind control her again, and she's like, bitch, that doesn't work on me anymore.
For some reason.
And then she just tosses him through the skylight onto a perfectly placed piece of wood.
And it's so funnily shot. It's like, piece of wood. Go look.
Yeah.
Buffy. It's there.
Exactly. And he just lands on the stake. And it's just like a really quick moment of like, well, okay, he's dead now, I guess.
Yeah.
Which, can I ask, why is his skeleton still there?
I didn't mind that because he's very old and probably it's just harder to dust him. And also it's so satisfying when Buffy smashes it later. I kind of am okay with it.
Okay. Yeah, I guess I can see that. I don't know. It's just, it's so clearly that all the other vampires fade into dust so quickly that you would think with a body that old, it would be the same way. And what, even almost faster.
What I like to think is maybe he's more demon than vampire at this point. Like, the demons take it over.
I could see that.
Because demons leave corpses, I think.
Okay.
Yeah, right? I think so.
Yeah.
So I'm okay with it.
Yeah, I mean, it's fine. It's just like, okay, there's a skeleton there. Mm-hmm. And then, when Buffy mentions that she dies, Willow just very casually says, wow, harsh.
Like, what?
What? That's not how you would react to your best friend dying, you know?
And Xander is like, hey, let's go dance. I'm like, Xander, shut up.
Yeah, and then they kind of just end the show with them all going off to the dance and kind of, like, laughing and, like, well, that was interesting, you know.
Buffy being okay with it makes a little bit of sense. Everyone else should have shut her down, give her a shock blanket and some cocoa, and tell her to get some sleep. Like, yeah. No.
Yeah. And then that's it. That's the end.
That's the end of season one.
It's not well done. I agree with very much with the fact that they probably didn't know if they were going to get renewed or not, and so they very kind of wanted just to make sure everything was tied up and, like, presented as an end just in case.
With an open.
Right. Which, with a possible sequel, you know. But, like, if not, then at least it was over and it had an ending. But it was just, it was very...
What makes this episode frustrating is that when it's, like all of Buffy,
yeah,
when it's good, it's incredible.
Yeah.
When it's bad, it's lame. It's just so lame.
Yeah. So, do you want to talk about what you were going
to
say?
My thing with Buffy's reaction to nearly dying is that I have also had my own brushes with death, and again, we can cut this, but I just wanted to kind of get this out where... I don't think Buffy's reaction is realistic. I think in season two, the beginning of season two, when we see her run away to LA and take on her middle name and do all that, sure. But what I don't think that they really took a second to think about how this fucks you up for a very long time.
Mm-hmm.
When Buffy truly really dies in season five, that fucks her up for the rest of the show. But that is really only because she goes to the afterlife and has some moment of peace and is dragged out of it.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a different reaction. What I don't think Joss Whedon considers is really how deeply nearly dying messes with your head. It completely changes your worldview. It completely changes, for me at least, it completely changes how you look at yourself and how you look at other people in a lot of ways. I'm not saying I want this to be like a grim, dark, nasty little show where, like, Buffy spends the whole time being broody. You know, we have, like, other shows for that.
Yeah.
We have Game of Thrones for that. But I wanted a little bit... I think you need to pick a tone.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you can go up and down a little bit. But when you have haha funny hijinks like demon robots alongside a 16-year-old girl drowning in a pool of water, like, it's Riverdale shit. It makes no sense.
Yeah.
And it's, I don't particularly like it.
Yeah, I have to agree. I mean, I've thankfully never come close to death like that, but from what I know medically, right, you do kind of go into a shock, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I can understand where she's coming from with the adrenaline, fighting the master. You know, those moments I can kind of understand where she's just, like, kind of pushing through it because of the adrenaline.
Mm-hmm.
But after that adrenaline fades, that's when everything should really hit you, you know? And, again, tell me if I'm wrong about this.
Or, yeah.
You know, feel free to correct me.
No, you're right.
But, like, it just, there should have been a moment where she was like, oh, my God, I died.
Yeah.
You know? And I'm not saying that she had to have, like, screaming fits of tears, you know, or anything like that, but she should have at least, like, sat down or something.
Like, I would have taken like a really nice like a group hug or something.
Yeah.
Like some moment of comfort between her and her friends, to show how far they've come and to show that they're there for her. Because when Buffy runs away, like, she thinks that her friends have kind of, like, abandoned her. Isn't that right? Like,
I think so, yeah.
Like.
Or that they don't understand.
As the series goes on, Buffy becomes increasingly alienated from her friends due to her Slayer job, really.
Mm-hmm.
And it would have been a really nice moment to cement from the start that even though Buffy believes that she's all alone, she's really not.
Yeah. I don't know. This ending doesn't feel like.
There's something missing, I think.
Yeah. Like that. Like you said, I think it would have been actually nicer if they hadn't ended with walking out of the library.
Mm-hmm.
If it had ended on, like, a group hug of all of them hugging Buffy.
Mm-hmm.
Because, wow, what the hell was this night?
Yes.
And I think that would have been more poignant, too, because it's, like, that moment of, like, wow, this really happened. We almost died.
Yeah.
You did die.
Yeah.
It's just, there's no weight to this ending.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's a lot of weight at the beginning of the episode.
There's so much.
Yeah, with this prophecy and the fact that Buffy is going to die and she's rejecting this idea and she's just going through this crisis. And then as the episode goes on, it kind of loses all of that. The ending kind of makes it feel like nothing.
Buffy too often throughout this entire series really tries to have its cake and eat it too.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's really evident here where it tries to have the heavy gravitas of a 16-year-old girl willingly going to face her death, but then also the wacky hijinks.
Yeah.
And it doesn't work.
Yeah.
If we're going to talk about, like, the whole... Okay, if you could describe the whole season in one word, what would it be?
Mediocre.
I want to say, like, almost confused.
Yeah. It has a lot of tonal shifts.
Yes.
Episode by episode.
Yes.
And even in the episode itself, especially, mm-hmm. like, the ones that are supposed to be the most important.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that it suffers from... I think we talked about this a couple episodes ago, or towards the beginning of our podcast, how, like, season one of Buffy really does suffer from what a lot of season ones mm-hmm. suffer from, and that's trying to find itself.
It's got growing pains.
Yeah. And I think that it... The show itself becomes more of what it was going to be
mm-hmm.
as it goes on.
Mm-hmm.
But it never really truly recovers from the weird tonal shifts.
Yes. Because even in season 7, what comes to mind is that stupid episode with the magic jacket. That boy's got the magic jacket and everyone falls in love with him.
Oh.
You got that amid Buffy's serious crises.
Yeah.
And so, like, Buffy has weird tonal shifts all throughout the series.
It's not even the fact that it was, like, monster of the week in the beginning. There mm-hmm. was always an overarching plot. You know, it's not Supernatural, right?
Which, I hate to say Supernatural does anything better, but Supernatural had a really consistent tone.
Yeah.
At first. Good God.
The first 5 seasons, at least.
Yes.
And I know, I think we kind of compare it to Supernatural a lot, but it's a very similar...
Urban fantasy type show.
Show, yeah. Supernatural obviously had an overarching plot, but it grew to that. At mm-hmm. first, it was kind of monster of the week, little mm-hmm. mysteries, trying to find their dad,
mm-hmm.
you know, just like little things that grew into larger things that started connecting into even bigger things, which I think actually really helped it throughout the first 5 seasons when it was super good.
Yeah.
Because
as it grew, it had if you kind of knew the Supernatural was getting towards Satan, you kind of knew it was going towards that sort of angle. So, yes, you've got the first Slayer. Who is the big bad of season 7? The first evil, isn't that his
name? Yes.
Yeah. You've got the first evil who was never established before.
No.
There's no big, big bad of Buffy. And that, I think, we're not asking for season 1 to have all of its answers and to know what it's going to do off the bat. But when you look at the show as a whole, even from this beginning, there's no consistent kind of thing you're trying to do.
Especially in the season 1, since we just watched
it,
the entirety of it. What I find really interesting is that unlike Supernatural, which builds up to a bigger plot, Buffy starts out with the Master.
Yeah.
We meet him in the first episode. We know he's going to be the big bad of the season. It's already established. Like, yeah, this is what we're facing. What I think is so interesting, and what really, I think, ruins this season for me, is the fact that we know the Master is a big part of it, but he doesn't feel like a big part of it. I think that's why I have such a problem with his storyline.
He's so physically disconnected because he's literally never in a scene unless it's a dream sequence or unless it's, like, a nightmare.
Yeah.
Like, he's never... I love interactions between heroes and villains. I love Luke and Darth Vader. I love, you know, like, any other ones. But...
of course you would choose Star Wars as your only point.
Loki and Thor. You know, I love... interplays between heroes and villains, and you don't get much of that between the Master and Buffy.
The Master is so, like you were saying, completely disconnected from the rest of the show, except for, like, tiny moments in the season, that it doesn't feel like he's the big bad, you know?
So, think of season two for a minute. Buffy and Angelus was such a strong connection because she knew him. I'm a writer, and I always think that the hero should have some kind of connection to the villain in some way or form, even if it's kind of slim. Buffy, I mean, besides the fact that the Master is evil, and besides the fact that the Master is going to destroy the world, why does she care about him? You know? It's like she doesn't.
Yeah.
The reason why season two is so often lauded, and the reason why it's looked on so fondly, is because Buffy has a really strong connection to Angel.
Yeah. And I think that's also... why it's so good is because Angel is a constant, or Angelus, it's such a constant threat in the back of her mind always. Even when they're doing, like, the mini Monster of the Week episodes.
Oftentimes he's behind it, and oftentimes he's involved somehow, you know.
Or he shows up in the episode to, like, subtly remind her, hey, I'm still here. You never know what I'm going to do next.
But he's creepy about it every time, which is fun.
Yeah, and it's just, it's that constant, like, looming threat. That's always the scariest, you know? And the Master doesn't have that at all. And I think I really didn't remember why I didn't like his storyline so much until I rewatched it. And I was like, oh, that's why. Because he doesn't feel like a villain.
And it's a shame because the Master's writing in of itself is pretty good. And his actor's really good.
Yeah,
and
I mean, we laud, like, how campy and how amazing he is. Like, as an actor, as a character, he's great. I love him. I wish we had seen more of him. I wish he was a bigger threat. I wish that...
he was a more personal threat.
Yes. Like, I think the worst thing is the fact that he was stuck in one area the entire time. And I know why they were doing that, because if he breaks out, then the Hellmouth opens, you know?
Yeah.
But I wish
why, by the way?
I don't know. There's no given reason. But I wish that, like... he had interacted Buffy even more, like, even in dream sequences, or in this weird Slayer-Master connection that they supposedly have that's hinted throughout the rest of the season.
Yeah.
Like, if he had just been a constant threat back there in the back of her mind, like, or, like, in her nightmares, in her dreams.
It would have been really claustrophobic, it would have been really personal, it would have been really, like a tedious kind of, like, itch, you know? It would have been really good.
Because you can't do anything about a dream. Right?
Yeah, yeah.
And so it's like that constant threat in the back of your mind of just like, when is he going to show up next? And it didn't have to be every episode.
Yeah.
But like just a moment of like, hey, remember me? You know, I'm still here. Still going to kill you. You know, just like that would have made it so much more intense, I think.
Yeah.
Like Angelus in season two, where he's that creeping, looming threat in the background and you never know when he's going to attack next. But you always know he's there.
So the Marvel movies, everyone says people have a problem with because, you know, and comic book movies have these problems where the big bad or the big threat is like a big laser in the sky or whatever. The Master's a big laser in the sky. He's going to vaguely destroy the world. Oopsie daisy.
Yeah.
But like, there's no personal threat to Buffy really. And I'm thinking about other seasons where this also happens. Think about season four. Think about Adam. Like, who gives a shit about Adam?
Yeah. He's just like some random...
demon robot human
thing that just shows up out of nowhere and is like, hey, I'm here to destroy the world. And it's like, who are you?
Why do we care?
Yeah. A lot of Buffy's villains have that problem of like, it's like, these random guys that show up and are like, I'm going to destroy the world. And everybody's like, who the fuck are you?
Yeah.
What do you do?
Glory is good because she is personally after Buffy's sister.
Uh-huh.
The trio are even not that bad because Buffy knew them and they're personally going after Buffy.
Right. And of course, we talked about Angelus. But
Angelus. You know. And who's in season 3? The mayor. The mayor was good.
Oh, the mayor.
The mayor was good because he really was going after Sunnydale, not just the world.
Yeah. And it's a personal attack because that's where Buffy lives. That's where all her friends are.
And Faith.
And Faith. Yeah. And it's just the best seasons of Buffy have that villain that mm-hmm. is actually going to do something that affects Buffy and her friends. The worst seasons of Buffy have that vague villain in the background that's just like, I'm going to destroy the world somehow. You'll see. And I know you mentioned Marvel movies before, but like, even those villains had a better connection.
Yeah.
Loki is obviously trying to destroy the world because he's pissed off at his brother and his father.
I think a more apt connection might be like Suicide Squad.
For what? For Buffy?
No, for that vague sort of amorphous villain that just sort of wants to destroy the world.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's very much laser in the sky.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. Random villain that they're only going after because they have to. But, like, why do they care? Yeah. And I think that's also why I hate that movie so much.
Oh, it's a terrible movie.
It's a bad movie. This season really reminded me of the bad parts of Buffy.
Yeah.
And I hate to say that because it's season 1.
Mm-hmm.
And there are really some good moments in it. And I love Buffy still. And I love Giles. And I love Willow. Mm-hmm. You know? I could care less about Xander. and I love Cordelia. You know? But it just made me kind of go, eh?
If we were watching this for the first time, I don't think this would really make me want to continue it.
Yeah. And I think that's why a lot of people who go into Buffy not having grown up on it.
Mm-hmm.
Stop watching after season 1.
Our friends stopped watching after season 1.
Yeah, which I don't blame them.
Yeah,
this
honestly.
Season is not a good reflection.
And looking back at it, I always had the impression that, oh, it's not that bad. Oh, it's just some episode of the week stuff. I mean, a Monsters of the Week stuff. It's going to be, like, fun in its own way, but the bad outweighed the good.
Yeah.
I do want to talk about some character arcs that we saw throughout the series. One thing I really wanted to point out, where was Willow this entire season?
I don't know. She really didn't do a lot in this season.
Dating a robot. That was about it.
Yeah. She did a couple techie things, I guess.
Yeah.
But other than that, she was just kind of the third wheel.
I feel like the writers really didn't know what to do with her, and they still don't really until, like, late season 2 when she starts to get into witchcraft.
Yeah. She very much feels like the sidekick to Buffy.
Yes.
You know? Which, honestly, I think that's what Xander's role should have been. Not in a good way, but just, mm-hmm. like, he should have been the extra character, mm-hmm. you know? But Xander got way more attention in this season than I remember.
Oh, my God. It's like he's the main character or something.
Yeah. It's like the Xander show.
It's ridiculous. And I think he gets less attention later on,
mm-hmm.
especially as we get more into Buffy's love life and stuff like that. Okay, my perfect vision of Buffy. Write out Xander completely, obviously. Have it be a close relationship with Buffy and Willow. And then bring in Cordy as a third wheel,
mm-hmm.
you know, or like a third person.
Yeah, I could definitely see that.
That would have been way more fun and way more, almost kind of like Winx Club or like another one of the shows with a really strong female cast.
Like Witch.
Like Witch.
Yeah.
I shouldn't have brought in Winx Club as a great example, but like.
Let's not even talk about this.
It's what came to mind.
Yeah. Actually, can I just mention, I loved the cartoon. Growing up, this new show that they put on Netflix, what the
Ooh.
Hell? Netflix, no one asked for this.
No one wanted this.
No one wanted this.
Give them their outfits. Anyway.
Make it fun! Where's the Please. Sparkles? Where are the fairy wings? Where are the weird, quirky outfits that shouldn't work, but do because it's a teenage girl show?
Where are the big, chunky shoes?
Yeah!
Brett's shoes.
Where is that fun?
Anyway.
This is not a Wings Club podcast.
But Willow, I felt, was really shortchanged in this season, and I really wanted to see more of her because she is so sweet and so good and so fun.
Mm-hmm.
When she gets her chance to shine, which is not often.
Yeah.
Buffy and Giles, I thought, had really strong arcs up this season, as short as it was and as much they had to share with other folks.
Yeah.
Angel, I remember that there being more of Angel than there was.
That's what I thought, too. I felt like he was very absent in this season, especially comparing how much we see in him of him in season 2. Like, he's such a big part of Buffy's life in season two that you would think they would kind of utilize him a little bit more in this first season.
Think about it. So we have seasons 1, 2, and 3 that have Angel, mainly. Season one, he's only in about half the episodes. Season two,
he's only there for, like, a couple minutes at the most.
Season two, he spends a lot of it evil. Season three, he spends a lot of it either crazed or not there.
Yeah.
We don't get that much Angel in the grand scheme of things. We get much more Spike.
I know, which is interesting when you think about it, because, like, Buffy and Angel is such a lauded couple.
Like a ship, like a...
Yeah.
Like Angel really shapes a lot of Buffy's life, and he's... It feels like he's barely there.
Yeah, which is... It's so interesting. Like, I wish, even if they had done it off-screen, like, I wish they had more mentions of them being together. Hanging out, you know. It's just so... Not. They don't really have a relationship in this first season.
It's very underwhelming, and I really want to see more of it, which is a sign of good writing when you want to see more of something in a good way. But I really want to see, like, maybe they could have gone on a date. Maybe they could have hung out more. I love to see, like, relationship arcs where they're just, like, hanging out.
Yeah.
You know? Like, maybe that's boring TV. I don't know. But I would have thought it was cool.
It would have been nice to see them interact more than just... Angel tuxedo masking it for a couple first episodes, and then the scene where he gets invited to her place, and then after that it's like Angel's a vampire, you know, and then we don't see him for a while.
On the other hand, I'm gonna kind of play devil's advocate and also say I just considered that Angel makes a lot of impact in the brief scenes he has, and also I wonder almost if Buffy made their relationship more of a big deal than it actually was because she was so young. And it's, like, a kind of a play. Angel has, like, a short role but a big impact, whereas Spike has kind of a smaller impact but a bigger role, kind of. It's really interesting to compare Spike and Angel, especially as we see them later. But for right now, I mean, maybe Angel is better, like, mysterious and aloof. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of see that. It's just, like, I guess we'll have to, when we get into season two, we'll have to see how the relationship progresses before he turns evil. Because if it's in, like, the first couple episodes, I'm gonna be calling bullshit, because, like, really, really, guys.
Yeah.
But it's also kind of got that insta-love effect, where, like, she sees him, and he's the dark, mysterious, brooding guy, and she instantly falls in love with him, because she's a teenage girl. Which... I don't know. I don't hate insta-love, like a lot of people seem to do.
Neither do I.
I just think that it only works in certain respects and in certain things. Like, it's very classic Disney, which is fine because that's what you expect out of Disney movies, you know. It's even, like, in some YA books and, like, YA
tropes slash and
children's and movies, cartoons, stuff like that, which I can accept because you're only there for a certain amount of time, you know. You suspend your...
Disbelief.
Thank you. For a few moments just to believe it. You know, that's fine. But in this, it's just, it's very interesting because it's more insta-lovey than I remember it being. And I don't think it works in this case.
I think, I feel, and maybe I'm completely projecting, but I feel like a hint of hesitation from Joss Whedon and co. to write this, like, real, full, robust romance arc. Because even... Again, comparing to Spike, we're not even considering Riley. Again, Spike was a little bit better done, but it feels like as they're first initiating this romantic arc with Buffy, they're, like, hesitant to do it almost.
Yeah.
They're hesitant to make it too much of a romance-y show. And I wonder if there was some sort of network prerogative to make this more of a show for boys. Like, as much as it is a feminist show, I wonder if that's the reason why Xander is so involved. I wonder if that's the reason why there's insta-love and very little romance. You know what I'm saying?
I mean, maybe. I don't know how much the network had influence over this, and I don't think we will really ever know. But, yeah, that could definitely be part of it, is that the network was like, yeah, cut down on this part and make this more, like, make it more action-y. Make that guy more prevalent, talking about Xander, you know?
The big question I think we really need to ask ourselves is, does anyone come to Buffy for the fights and for the action?
No.
No.
And if you do, wow, you picked the wrong show. There are much better shows to go to for action or fights or movies, i.e. Mm-hmm. John Wick. Go mm-hmm. watch John Wick.
You go watch enjoy John Wick.
It much more. But, like, this is just, I feel like the action and the actual slaying part and everything is mm-hmm. so background compared to everything else that goes on in Buffy.
And, you know, I'm okay with that.
Yeah, and I'm okay with that because it's not about that.
It's all metaphors. It's all a metaphor for teenage life and growing up.
Yeah, and it's, this first season doesn't really show that.
Yeah, it doesn't, it's like a watered down Buffy almost.
Yeah.
I wonder also how much of all of our perceptions of Buffy as this big, romantic, tragic tale comes from time and comes from tropes later and comes from
and like the fandom. And fandom, yeah.
And not the actual show itself.
I mean, that could be a big part of it. Because, like, we mentioned in our first episode, it had been, what, 10 years or something yeah. like that since we had watched Buffy? So I'm sure a lot of it has been built up in our heads. And played slightly differently. Because, you know, fandom changes a lot of things.
Mm-hmm.
And I know I've done it myself. I'm guilty of this where, like, I remember something and I'm like, oh, yeah, that was definitely in the show. And it's like, no, that was actually just a fandom thing made up.
Yeah.
And that was never a part of the show, you know? Mm-hmm. Or I have certain, like, character traits that I have envisioned for a character that have actually never come up in the show. Mm-hmm. And it's just like something I built up in my head or I heard in fandom. And I was mm-hmm. like, I really like that. I'm going to internalize that now, you know? And I think we're all guilty of that. Mm-hmm. But like, that could be a big part of it is that looking back on it now and rewatching this, wow, we built up this show in our heads to be way better than we thought it or actually was.
And we're only in season one. I hope that's not the case. I hope as yeah. we continue to chug along, we really get to see the show for what it is.
Mm-hmm.
Something I'm worried about as we continue on in season two, as I'm thinking of all my favorite parts of Buffy, most of them are in season two.
I do remember season two being one of my favorites.
Yes.
And I'm afraid I'm going to be deathly disappointed by
it. Oh, if season two is disappointing, we quit. We're going to quit the podcast. If season two sucks, bye. If the end of season two, when Angel tries to stab Buffy, and then he says, you have no friends, you have nothing, like what have you got? And she says, me. If that it doesn't hit
the way it
hits, I quit.
Yeah, I don't know. I guess we'll have to see. Yeah. I'm really hopeful that it gets better from here.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not expecting high art or anything.
No, God,
it's
no.
It's still Buffy. With all its issues and mistakes. But I miss a nostalgia almost.
Yeah.
Of it. And I'm afraid to let that go a little bit.
I hope us doing this doesn't ruin our like love for Buffy and our like nostalgia for it. That really would kind of demonstrate a truly bad show, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is, I'm a little afraid of that now. I also hope that like us doing this podcast doesn't put anybody off from Buffy.
No. Like, if you're watching it for the first time, if you want to rewatch it, please go whole hog. Our opinions are not gospel.
No, there are opinions, obviously. This is completely subjective.
Yes.
And we are very hopeful, actually. And as much as we've been a little bit of a downer in this episode, we are very hopeful that it gets better,
mm-hmm.
That we will remember our favorite parts. And, like, I'm truly excited for season two. I remember loving season two.
Yeah.
Season one, I didn't remember as much, which is probably indicative of why.
Yeah.
But I really remember season two.
We started this podcast because we are Buffy fans.
Yeah.
First and human second. No, not really. But we wanted to rewatch it. We wanted to love it. We wanted to just sit here and say good things all day long. But we're being realistic and we're being truthful and we're saying our real thoughts. Yeah. So please, if you are put off by trying it, maybe like read the wiki for the first season and then jump into season two.
Yeah.
Or
like watch a couple episodes of season one. Skip over the ones that sound dumb because they probably are.
Yeah.
And they probably don't hold that much meaning to the season itself. And give season two a try. And that's what we're gonna do. We're gonna continue on.
Real quick, before we end this up, why don't we say our favorite episodes or our least favorite episodes?
Of season
one, yes.
Okay.
Let's start with favorite. Let's be positive first.
Okay. Or do we want to be positive last? I think we should end on a good note.
Okay, Lisa, so you're first.
Let's do Lisa's favorite first. I would say definitely, I think the pack has to be my least favorite.
I agree. Yeah, the pack.
It was just so bad.
So unpleasant. It was unpleasant, truly. It was truly.
Very unpleasant. It was so Xander-driven.
Mm-hmm.
So it really didn't do anything for the show.
Yeah.
And it never is brought up again. It's never anything that's important.
It's bad and it's inconsequential, yes. Which is just a true sin.
Yeah. It's truly a point against the first mm-hmm. season.
What's our favorite episode?
I would say, I think Angel is my favorite.
I was going to say Witch.
Really?
Yeah. Okay. So it's cool we disagree there. What's your reasoning?
I think Angel had a lot more of the story elements that I was looking for.
Yeah.
In season one. Also, it actually does give credence to Buffy and Angel's relationship.
Mm-hmm.
We see a lot of Darla in this episode, which
mm-hmm.
I didn't remember liking Darla, but mm-hmm. apparently I liked Darla a lot.
Yeah.
And you see kind of the master being super campy and just like, yeah. And I think this one just held a lot more in place for the season overall.
It was like a stick in the ground.
Yeah.
Not to be too punny.
Right. But it truly meant something, you know? And I think we saw a lot of character development for Buffy, in this episode, especially mm-hmm. between her and Angel.
Mm-hmm.
What's your reason for the Witch?
For me, I think Witch was just a good microcosm of good Buffy writing.
Mm-hmm.
It was funny. It had good characters. It had good character moments. It stands out in my mind when I think of season one and when I think of just moments that I really enjoyed. And even though it's a Monster of the Week episode, I mean, it does come back later.
Yeah. And it was a good Monster
of the Week. It was a good Monster of the Week episode. I think it's a good example of what Buffy can be, even when it's not trying to be end of the world.
Yeah. I think that's definitely in my top three.
Yeah. Yeah, Angel is also probably number two for me.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, anything else you want to say on this whole wonderful season?
I'm glad it's over.
Yes.
I'm really excited to go into season two,
actually. I am. I mean, I think you should see a little bit more animation out of us, a little bit more... love out of us, hopefully. And if not, then see you at a different show, maybe.
Maybe. But no, I'm really excited. We get to see more of Buffy and Angel and Angelus, who I love as a villain.
We get to see Spike, Drusilla. We get to see
Spike and Drusilla. And Faith is finally introduced.
Is she introduced in season two?
Isn't she?
I think it's three.
Is it three?
I think it's three.
Maybe I'm wrong.
Because her whole...
We'll find out.
We'll find out. We'll see.
It's a mystery for us all. But I don't know. I remember loving season two, and I'm so ready to watch too. It. Because this first season was kind of a bummer.
Is there an episode that you're really looking forward to in season two?
I'm really looking forward to the introduction of Spike and Drusilla.
That is extremely high up, but almost even higher is the Halloween episode.
Oh.
With Jaws' friend.
Yes.
I remember watching that so vividly with my mom on Halloween in sixth grade.
Really?
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah, I remember because I was talking to some popular girls in my class during PE, and I was like, what are you doing for Halloween? And they're like, oh, we're going trick-or-treating. And I was like, I'm going to go home and watch Buffy. And I was the coolest kid in the school. No, I wasn't.
You're such a nerd.
Those losers were going to go trick-or-treating. I was going to watch a teen show with my mom.
I don't know. Do you have anything else to say?
No, that's about it. Do you want to, like, take a week break after this episode, or do you want to just jump straight into season two?
I am actually quite ready to jump into season two. I think I Me need, too. Like, the good Buffy back.
Yes. I'm a little worried because I do remember season two, episode one, starting off pretty dreary,
mm-hmm.
but hopefully it'll still be good writing.
Yeah. I definitely know at least I will get a kick out of Spike and Drusilla.
Yes.
I will get a kick out of Angelus being a villain.
Mm-hmm. we get one of the best lines in the series, which we almost named the podcast after. Mm-hmm. When Buffy fucking takes a rocket launcher to a demon.
Yeah. Why didn't we call it that?
I don't know.
Anyway, but yeah, I don't know. There's a lot of hope for season two. A
lot of love.
Yeah, a lot of love. And sorry this is such a bummer, you guys. We didn't mean for it to be.
We're being honest. We're giving you that hard-hitting critique that you need and deserve.
I sell it, but you may not necessarily want.
No. We're telling it like it is.
Yeah. So that was it. That was season one.
That was season one, you guys. And yeah, we'll see you next week.
Yeah, thanks so much for listening. I hope we have better news next week for you.
Yeah.
But
see you then.
Bye.
Bye.